Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Building rock and roll, one nightclub at a time. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. And today on the show, the nightclub network that became known as the Chitlin Circuit. Plus, the record industry gears up for a copyright fight between labels and musicians. And we're going to set you up with an up-and-coming band in the latest installment of our series, Blind Date. But first, the Chitlin Circuit was the name given to a string of black-friendly venues that flourished mostly in the American South starting in the 40s. Among the many careers it helped launch were those of B.B. King, James Brown, and this guy, Little Richard. In a moment, we'll talk with Lee Fields, a musician who played on the Chitlin Circuit, but first, Preston Lauterbach tells the story of the circuit and the club owners and music impresarios who made it work, in a book called The Chitlin Circuit and the Road to Rock and Roll. Preston joins me by phone from where else but Memphis, Tennessee. Preston, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thanks, John.
So what is the Chitlin Circuit?
Well, you hit on it there in the intro. I would just say more specifically that during the times of segregation, the time that I cover in the book, which is basically late 30s to late 60s, black commerce was concentrated in towns and cities into either one district or onto one main street more often than not. And these are places like Beale Street in Memphis, Tennessee, where I am. Mm-hmm. But also smaller towns had their black main street as well. And so the people that worked and played and partied on these streets called them the Stroll. Now, every Stroll had a kingpin. Basically, the financier or impresario you referenced earlier, who either ran numbers, liquor, women, or all the above. And every kingpin, or queenpin, I should say, the ladies were involved in this angle of the business as well. Every one of these figures had a nightclub. And this is what really stimulated the business activity on the circuit, were these characters who developed up-and-coming artists, who promoted artists that were already making it, who gave them a place to sleep, a place to eat, and a little bit of money to hit the next stop. So mm-hmm. You fuse all these strolls and districts together across the map from the West Coast, Deep South, up through the Eastern Seaboard and back to the Midwest, and that's the Chitlin Circuit.
And who called it the Chitlin Circuit?
Well, the people who worked it referred to it in that respect, because the chitlin is a term that refers to the intestine of a hog, an
right.
old Southern cuisine tradition which dates back to slavery times when the slaves had what was left of the hog after slaughtering, after the white man got the hams and the chops, right? So they had things like the intestines, the feet, the snouts, and the ears. So the name really works because it's about making do with what's left. And also cuisine, you know, that soul cuisine like chitlins and fried fish and barbecue were some of the staple goods served in these joints in the Deep South.
So it was a way for these musicians not only to, you know, get used to performing in front of an audience, to perfect their craft, but also to make a few bucks, as you say, and to get a hot meal occasionally.
Well, absolutely. It was the way to make a living. Not only was urban geography segregated during this time period, but the music business was segregated,
mm-hmm.
with the exception, a few exceptions of artists like Louis Armstrong, Duke Ellington, Cab Calloway, Ella Fitzgerald, who transcended that color barrier and entertained and were famous in white circles as well as African-American circles. For the most part, that was a closed system. So any up-and-coming black artist particularly would have to cut his teeth on the Chitlin Circuit before crossing over, as they say, or as many did, not crossing over. Plenty of people have stayed on the circuit and made a good living and had a good career of it.
All right. Now, your book is called The Chitlin Circuit and the Road to Rock and Roll. How does rock and roll come out of this this kind of network of nightclubs and juke joints and beer halls?
I'll preface it this way. The creative energy in the black music business followed the money during the 40s. There wasn't a lot of money in the record business for black acts. Black acts made their money at the door. They made their money on the road. They made their money on the circuit. So this is where innovation took place. One such innovation came about through an artist by the name of Louis Jordan, who at the height of the big band craze started performing with a small band, five pieces to be exact, which is different from everything else virtually, which was in like the Ellington mode of 18 to 20 pieces, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it was the Jordan approach to making music was a new trend. The fans liked it because they've been hearing big band for decades. The business people, the kingpins, liked it because overhead was lower.
Five guys to play.
Exactly. So that's fewer reeds to replace, fewer broken high-heeled shoes for the transvestites, lower salaries overall. And so it was more economically feasible, particularly for a cash-strapped black audience down south to afford. So this really stimulated a new trend, and that led to artists such as, well, I'll put it this way. If you could ask Ray Charles, Little Richard, James Brown, Chuck Berry, ask them who their Elvis or their Beatles were, who was it who really made them, inspired them, and made them want to make music, they would say Louis Jordan was everything.
So let's give people a chance to hear Louis Jordan and his Timpani Five, a little bit of Jump Blues from the Chitlin' Circuit. That is Louis Jordan and his Timpani Five, Let the Good Times Roll. And back in the 40s, something really remarkable was happening on the so-called Chitlin Circuit, as author Preston Lauterbach recounts in his new book called The Chitlin Circuit and the Road to Rock and Roll. The bands got smaller, the voices got bigger and more prominent. Louis Jordan, rather than the band, was the sort of focus of attention. Preston's with us on the line from Memphis, Tennessee, and joining me in the studio is Lee Fields, a musician who performed at many Chitlin Circuit venues. His most recent album is called Treacherous, and he's with me here in the Soundcheck studio. Lee, welcome to the program.
How you doing, John?
So what was the Chitlin Circuit like when you first set out as a young teenager in the 1960s on it?
Well, when I started out in the mid-60s, when they referred to the Chitlin Circuit, it was basically black clubs. That included, he had described earlier that it was just mainly in the South, but from any particular musician, if you talk to him about the Chitlin Circuit, you knew that you were going to play a black crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, the reason why I think that was because, as he said before, based upon the food that they served there when we were in bondage, they gave us, the lesser desirable parts of the animals. And mainly, speaking of the pig, was more or less, like he said, the chitlins. So, but what it was like in that particular time, it was like just people just like it is today, going out to have a good time, depressed to a point, and it was up to the artists to give the people that euphoria,
So when you were just a kid, you were like 14, right?
Yeah,
when you started. But you ended up working with a lot of guys who, Preston's book covers, as he said, from the late 30s to the late 60s. You ended up working with a lot of guys who had been on the scene for a good portion of that time.
I shared a stage with Bill Doggett. I shared a stage with Solomon Burke.
Mm-hmm.
Wilson Pickett. Joe Tex.
And what
Percy Sledd, people like that.
What kind of music? I mean, was it Was it a single kind of music, or could it be a different thing every night?
Well, we call it then, we call it rhythm and blues.
Right.
But when the artist played, if he played to the white crowd, then he was playing crossover. But if he played to a black crowd at that particular time, it would call the chilling circuit. It's just like...
Hey, Lee, can I ask you a quick question?
Yeah.
Did you perform the same set for white crowds as you did for black crowds?
I might have to change a few songs.
Uh-huh.
I might have to... certain songs I wouldn't do
if it
was too
too racy.
Yeah.
Yeah. A friend of mine here talked about how he had his salt set and his pepper
set. So you had to kind of smooth it down a little.
Right.
And
when you say you for a white audience, that would have meant what? A college?
Yeah, I was playing colleges, sorority parties, fraternity parties, and stuff like that.
Right. So those were basically your choices. If it was a white audience, it was on a campus or just off campus. And if it was a black audience, it was the Chitlin Circuit.
Right. Because it's not necessarily the change in the music that gave it that name. It's with the crowd. Because the association from, you know, it's just like back in the day, right? Back in slavery time, the black man then was colored. And then as times went on in the 60s, we became Negroes. And then in the early 70s, we became black. And then now we're African Americans. I don't know where we're going to be next. But I'm waiting for the next change. But all of it is good.
How do you feel about that terminology, the Chitlin Circuit?
Well, really, it doesn't bother me because, like, to be frank with you, like, when I was in France, I spent a lot of time in France and all over the globe. Chitlins have been eaten by just about every race out there. I mean, over in France, they got another name for it, but it's still chitlins.
It's fine cuisine over there.
Yeah,
sweet bread. From your point of view.
Yeah. And then you got this blood pudding and all that stuff. So all people eat the same thing, basically.
Preston, do you ask that question for a reason? Did you find people in researching your book who did find that the term Chitlin Circuit smacked of racism somehow?
Well, of course it does. There's no question about it. Most people who I interviewed were perfectly proud to have worked the circuit and really weren't ashamed about that terminology. I mean, it's factual. However, I'm a white dude, and I'm committing years of my life to this thing, and the terminology upsets me a little bit because there's an artist named Bobby Rush who says, it's something that sounds like it's less than something.
In other words, it
sounds second class. And really, when you think about those artists, Louis Jordan, James Brown, that's not second class talent. I know for a fact that the brains behind the Chitlin Circuit are not second class brains. So it's first class intellect, first class talent, and yet it is hidden behind this second class term. And really, my theory about why this isn't the accepted version of rock and roll evolution is that it is hidden behind this term, that it hasn't been better investigated.
But as a black man, I look at it as it was intended to be, probably, said in a derogative fashion.
Mm-hmm.
But as knowing what it really is,
right.
I don't feel that way because my ancestors, as I described the names that we call ourselves or were called throughout the years from colored, Negro, black, and Afro-American. The colored man was a colored man.
Right, exactly.
Now, when it gets derogatory, if you refer to colored as a colored boy.
Interesting.
Now, but as for what I prefer to be called, of course I would prefer to be called an Afro-American. But just like rhythm and blues, they used to say rhythm and blues. They don't say rhythm and blues anymore. They say R&B today, which it has changed a bit.
So for you, the term Chitlin Circuit has lost whatever edge.
If you take the sting out of something, in other words, I got to look at what it brought. What it brought. It brought some of the greatest artists that have ever lived. So if the outcome of it was very positive for a people, then I have to accept what they called it at the time as okay. They were trying to name it something less than what it was, but if a diamond is a diamond in the rough, If you clean that diamond off, it's going to be a diamond.
Right.
So the Chitlin Circuit end up being a diamond.
Preston Lauterbach is the author of the book, The Chitlin Circuit and the Road to Rock and Roll. He's with us on the line. Lee Fields, musician who played at the Chitlin Circuit venues around the country, is with me in the studio. And this is Lee in action with The Expressions and a song called Honey Dove.
I can't live without your love. Why can't we make it like it was? Since you've been gone, I've been all alone, waiting and waiting with my telephone. You never call, and girl, I'm so alone. You're hurting me, honey, right down to the bone. Ooh, baby, love.
Is Lee Fields and the Expressions with Honey Dove from Lee's 2009 record, My World. Sounds like, Lee, we can still hear the echoes of your work
in
the 60s and 70s.
It's amazing to see, like, at that particular time, back in the 60s, okay, I was performing for predominantly black audiences. Nowadays, it's a predominantly white audience, which... the audience to me has no color, but I'm referring to it now so you can understand what I'm trying to say. When I walk out on that stage, or whether I'm in Africa, or whether I'm in North Carolina, or whether I'm in California, that audience is an audience, and they came to be uplifted in spirit.
Right.
So I look at it as that.
Preston, the move from rhythm and blues, I mean, as Lee said, you know, we call it R&B these days, but really back in the 40s, you're seeing classic rhythm and blues sort of being performed on the Chitlin Circuit, and then that eventually, you know, begins to coalesce into what we call rock and roll. The term rock, rockin', was it a musical term on the circuit?
Initially in black culture, it's you know, a synonym for sex, any kind of sexual activity would be rocking with your baby, right? Right about the time that Louis Jordan got hot and introduced that new trend of the small band and the vocals being emphasized, that phrase rocking began to take on this new meaning, which was more musical, more lifestyle, very much the same way people use it today. And it was in vogue in the black press during World War II, very much the way it is today. A critic would write, saw Louis Jordan's band at so-and-so theater, and they rocked the house.
Right.
You know, this band rocks, this song rocks. And that phrase caught on with the music, particularly through an artist by the name of Roy Brown, who cut a song called Good Rockin' Tonight.
Right. Now, which Elvis Presley would later cover, but this is the Roy Brown version, Good Rockin' Tonight.
Well, I'm gonna hold my baby tight as I can. Tonight she'll know I'm a mighty, mighty man. I heard the news, there's good rockin' tonight. Oh, yes, I heard the news, there's good rockin' tonight. Well, I'm gonna hold my baby tight as I can. Tonight she'll know I'm a mighty, mighty man.
Good Rockin' Tonight from Roy Brown. Before there was James Brown or B.B. King or any of the other stars who came out of the Chitlin Circuit, there were artists like Roy Brown on the Chitlin Circuit using that word rock and rockin' in a way that would later come to be very similar to the way we use it today. And so Preston Lauterbach's book, appropriately called The Chitlin Circuit and the Road to Rock and Roll. Now, Preston, you know, Lee was telling us that he got on the scene in the mid-60s. Your book sort of covers up to the late 60s. What happens at the end of the 60s to mark, if not an actual end, at least a kind of a signpost in the Chitlin Circuit?
Two major transformations took place, which reshaped the circuit and changed the way it had functioned back in the heyday of Louis Jordan and Roy Brown and the Kingpins. One... as I said earlier, records were not seen in the 40s as a terribly profitable avenue in black music. That changed through the artists who broke off of the circuit, like Little Richard and James Brown. And Johnny Ace is another one who's not well remembered today, but was a first one of the early major crossover successes.
Who's that, Lee?
I think the song was Clock on the Wall, right?
Yeah, he had The Clock. Mm. He had Pledging My Love, which is often covered. And he had one called My Song. Exactly. Yeah. Lee knows.
The late, great Johnny Ace, as the song calls him.
I was inspired by him.
He's a wonderful artist. He inspired many. But another major change, though, was urban renewal, John, which is a governmental action which more or less bulldozed a lot of these strolls and a lot of these districts where the kingpins ran the nightclubs and the circuit action had run and functioned so fruitfully for the 30s, 40s, and 50s. When I was doing my research, in fact, going from Indianapolis, Indiana, New Orleans, Macon, Georgia, I would always visit what had been the stroll, Houston, Texas as well, and invariably find parking lots or interstate off-ramps. No kind of signage, you know, so there's no buildings to remind people what had been there, to provoke the question, what happened here, and no signs to notify people that something had been there. So it's history and culture that it's just been completely paved over. The action after urban renewal moved to the ghetto and some clubs that I'm guessing that Lee has played in, places like Club Paradise in Memphis.
Yes, I played that. I played Paradise, Club Paradise in New York City.
Oh, okay.
Or down on 135th Street.
I don't know that place, but so the clubs moved out of downtown and into ghettos, at least in the Deep South.
And Lee, you know, do we hear, I mean, we have just a few seconds left, but, you know, what did you learn on the circuit that
what I
you still use today?
What I learned on the circuit, the valuable lesson that I learned, I think a person that, although the past might not be as you would like for it to be, but I think every person should embrace their past so that they would know where they're going.
Mm-hmm.
Like all of the things that happened back from the days of when they used to call it the Chitlin' Circuit that I could remember, and all of the things that I heard my mother and father talk about, their mother and father back in harsher times, I try to instill in my kids so that they would have a better direction because they know where they come from. But if you just discard everything, I want to talk about that. I don't want to talk about that. That wasn't good.
Then you end up with what Preston's talking about, a history that's been paved over. The book is a remarkable one called The Chitlin' Circuit and the Road to Rock and Roll by Preston Lauterbach, a music journalist and author on the line with us from Memphis, Tennessee. Lee Fields, whose album Treacherous is latest, you're hearing in the background, a veteran of the Chitlin' Circuit venues. And guys, thank you both so much for being with us on Soundcheck.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. I've enjoyed talking to both of you guys.
I enjoyed talking to you as well, Preston.
All right, Lee. Be good.
Okay, bye-bye.
This is Soundcheck.
I'm going to till the early morning light, when there's too hard, they can rock it, and there's no one.
Coming up next, a provision in U.S. copyright law could give artists the chance to take back ownership of their work. We'll hear what's at stake and who's affected. And later, we bring you another Soundcheck blind date. It's true, you could meet your musical match later on Soundcheck.
Worry not and rest your mind.